You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Just because you think you can, or you got the run, you got to run, run. Crying against the odds, you're in a trance. Say, who did you think? Thanks for listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples.
That song is You Got to Run, Spirit of the Wind by Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. Today's episode is about Indigenous femme writers and how they create worlds and reflect the world we live in. But first...
No, Nesla'an Kwetasawet. I'm Steph Wood. I'm a citizen of the Squamish Nation. I was born and raised on Squamish territory, and here's the rest of the Indigenous Collective in the studio today.
Dringweezy, Autumn Schnell Vilji, Chief Jim Cooey, Janet Cooey, Jacqueline Cooey, Wade Schnell Shadeji. Hi, my name is Autumn Schnell. I am from Treaty 11 territory, and I'm Gwich'in and Inuvialuit on my mother's side. But I was born and raised in Amiskwetchewaskayagan on Treaty 6 territory, and now I have the privilege of living and studying here on unceded and occupied Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh lands. Do you want to go next, Amanda?
Sure. My name is Amanda. My relatives were settlers from Ireland. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, on the traditional territories of the Miami, Potawatomi, and Peoria peoples. I am privileged to live and study on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples.
Great. Do you want to go, Jamuna?
Sure. Hi, my name's Jamuna Galay Tamang. I was born in the Tsleil-Waututh territory of North Vancouver. My family comes from Nepal and the Dene Métis up in northern Saskatchewan and Ukrainian out in Manitoba. And I have the privilege of being out here on the unceded Coast Salish territories.
You're listening to the very first episode of Unceded Airwaves' fourth season. For any new listeners, we're a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous volunteers. Every episode, we discuss Indigenous stories, arts, and current affairs. Our goal is to amplify Indigenous voices and narratives. If you're interested in getting involved, hit us up on Facebook or Twitter at Unceded Airwaves.
In setting out to create the first episode for this season, we sort of naturally fell into seeking out powerful women artists and storytellers. So many, in fact, we're doing a special two-part series for episodes 1 and 2 about Indigenous women as storytellers in the public sphere. Autumn has the first interview for us to listen to. Who'd you get a chance to speak to, Autumn?
I actually got a chance to speak to Jules Kustashin, who is a really, really interesting Cree writer, filmmaker, and also storyteller, content creator. She does basically a whole bunch of things. But we sat down for an interview yesterday, and it was about her most recent book, Unearthing Stories, I believe is what it's called. She'll get into it later. But about her most recent book. And I actually had the privilege of attending a reading and like a book launch that she did here at UBC. I think it was last Thursday. So we kind of spoke about that, and that was referenced a little bit in the podcast. So have fun. Enjoy listening to this. And also listen to how cool Jules is. She shares so many cool stories. But
Wache Jules Kustachanina Nitisina Kasun Arawapskat Nito Chin Muskwa Nito Tem. My English name is Jules, and my spirit name is Woman Who Holds Fire. I'm a band member of Arawapskat First Nation in Northern Ontario, and I'm here as a PhD candidate with candidate. You can tell, like, yes, I've been in school too long. I am a PhD candidate with the Institute of Gender, Race, Sexuality, and Social Justice at
nice.
UBC.
Lovely. Can you tell us a little bit about the history behind your book and what inspired
right.
it?
So I started writing at a very, very young age. So I was in elementary school, And I found peace while I was writing, like trying to understand my world and what was happening around me. So, I started really young. And then I have about maybe 30 journals at home from before the age of 19. So many journals. So I just journaled all the time. It was just a release for me, form of expression. And so at 19, I took it more seriously and started writing more poetry. And now I'm in my mid-40s and I finally get the book published, but it's actually a 27-year journey. So some of the poetry is back when, you know, when I was 19 or in my 20s and my 30s and then recent pieces. So, yeah, it's quite the book. And I just kept submitting for publications and and I think what was happening, I was like just getting shortlisted or people were like, we don't really get your stuff. Like, what are you speaking to? But I think, you know, nowadays in the last 10 years, there's been a lot of education and shift of mindsets and stuff. So, I think it's just finally being appreciated. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What made you want to keep going after getting shortlisted or like not getting?
I am stubborn. I don't take no for an answer. I think, you know, I've always been kind of one to face my fears, and I don't take no very easily. I just find other ways around. So, I mean, most of my work, you know, like films and stuff like that, I had come up with the idea maybe 10 years ago, and I just kind of bank things, you know, and ideas and so forth. So, I just felt like, I mean, I believed in my work, and I knew the stories had, you know, there was content there. There was important subject matter that I was touching upon. So I just believed so much in my work that I just felt like there's got to be an audience. There's got to be, you know, people that are into the same kind of things I'm into. And I just kept pushing forward. And then this year, 2018, I just said, you know what, I'm going to submit. Let's see what happens. And then I got a yes. And I think I almost fell off my chair when I got the letter. I was like, wow, okay, this is real.
Finally happening.
Yeah, and then so I've been working with editor Joanne Arnault, and she's amazing, and it was just such a great journey, and then we got it completed and done and out there, and it's doing quite well, so I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the book, I've birthed it, now it's time for the book to co-live its life, you know, go inform and hopefully change people's minds. And
can you tell us about the process of what publishing it has been like, especially with, like you said, an Indigenous publisher?
It's been great. I mean, this is my first experience. I mean, I have like pieces and anthologies and stuff like that, but my work was kind of pulled apart and then submitted to different places. But what I really like about this is that my work is all in one place, like in one book, you know?
Yeah.
And it's been a great experience. I think working with the editor has been really eye-opening in terms of writing, because she was asking pertinent questions like, what does this mean? What do you mean by that? So, you know, when you write, you just write.
Yeah.
You know, like I just write for myself. I'm just writing. I'm not thinking about the audience, really. I'm just trying to get stuff out there. And then working with an editor, you know, she's asking questions about the form. What are you trying to say in this sentence or with this word? Why did you choose that word? And then it really gets you thinking about your writing process. So for me, that was informative, and I think it'll inform my next bit of writing that I do, because I'm hoping to do another book of poetry and possibly a memoir really soon.
Oh, wow.
Once I get my dissertation done, which hopefully I should do that sooner than later.
So what has it been like being like such a, obviously like a content creator, but both creative and kind of academic?
Academia. Yeah, it's interesting. I honestly, I've been having this conversation a lot, whether or not I feel like I fit into academia. Sometimes I feel like I do and sometimes I don't. I just have a critical mindset anyways. I always ask, you know, questions that kind of make people uncomfortable. And I don't mean to make them uncomfortable. I'm just asking questions. And I guess university is a place to do that, right?
Yeah.
But I really enjoy the conversations that I do have while I'm here as a student. And I think also what's been great about being in academia is you're kind of exercising your brain, you know, like you're reading different ideas and theories and so forth. So, you know, that's cool. But I think for me, I'm really enjoying the act of creation and creating work and seeing my work out there. Like that's what feeds my soul. That's what feeds my spirit. Academia is like, you know, I decided to do my PhD because I was thinking, you know, I'm getting older. What's going to happen? Like, is my art practice going to be able to sustain me? Am I going to be able to pay my bills? And I thought maybe, you know, going into academia, I can think about teaching. And, you know, so I'm kind of in that middle ground. Yeah. I'm just kind of trying to, I'm hoping that my arts practice can keep me alive, you know, and I don't have to do the 9-to-5 job. Yeah, just because my brain doesn't work that way. I'm a creator, right? I like to create content and stuff. So I'm just at that kind of place of the middle ground right now, trying to determine how I'm going to keep myself going.
Yeah.
And it's scary because Vancouver is so expensive and I want to stay here.
What have you been up to since it came out?
Oh my gosh, what have I been? I've been to a few film festivals. I was one of the filmmakers invited to TIFF this year.
Okay.
So that was really great. Meeting other filmmakers from around the world and being at TIFF, like, you know, the biggest film festival ever, I think. Well, not ever, but so they're bigger film festivals. But you know what I mean? It's up there in terms of caliber. So, and then I traveled to Arizona for another film festival, a Native Film Festival, and then just was in the UK and going to LA Skins because my film Ochi Squacho is having its U.S. premiere there at LA Skins Festival, and had our world premiere at Imaginative Film Festival with Ochi Squacho.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's just, it's been busy.
It hasn't been all about the book, baby.
Yeah, like, but what's been, my book, baby. what's been really great about, you know, going to the film festivals too, and I think the publishers appreciate that, is that, you know, I'm a media maker and I'm also a writer, but I bring the book with me, and then the film festivals have been really great in allowing some time and a platform to share the book as well.
Yeah.
So I've been, like, you know, talking about the book, and they're giving me time to do some readings and then selling the book, so it's kind of been great that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So totally.
And then, so what are some of your favorite poems?
Okay.
And what about the histories behind them, or like the kind of inspiration behind them?
So I grew up with my grandparents and my mom. My mom moved down south to the city. My mom's, I call her a residential school warrior. She went to St. Anne's Residential School from the age of 5 to 16. But my mom moved down to the city for employment and trying to find a better life. And but my grandparents were living up in Moosonee, and they didn't speak English. They only spoke Innu-Mohan, spoke Cree. And they were both hunters and trappers and lived off the land. So I feel that I had a great upbringing with them, and their cultural ways and their ways of being actually informed who I am today. And even being the daughter of a residential school warrior, you know, it's informed the work that I create. So, so this book is basically the experience I've had, you know, living with my grandparents, being the daughter of a survivor. And one of the hardest poems for me is called Nanan. And so my grandmother is basically my medicine pouch. And when she passed away, it was really hard because I went into this depression when she left, because, like, I was so close to my grandmother. I slept with my grandmother. I cooked with my grandmother, sat at the table and beaded with my grandmother. I was just with my grandmother, you know. It was just like, you know, her little purse pouch or something just stuck to her all the time, you know. And she was my medicine bundle, and we were just always together. And so when my grandmother passed away, I was really confused. I thought, am I still who I am without you? Because she's had such a huge influence on my life. So when she passed away, I went through this huge depression. Like, I just didn't know how to function my, you know, or live my life without her, because we were so close. And so this poem is basically about the last day that I saw her alive. And so I thought maybe I would read that one.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. All right, without crying.
Might be hard.
Yeah, no.
I think, did you read this one at the opening with Dave?
Yeah,
my friend and I were both just, like, sobbing.
Right, because, I mean, we all have these relationships, regardless of where we come from. Mm-hmm. We have people in our lives who are just so special, right? Mm-hmm. And when we lose them, it's huge.
Her cook-em just passed away the beginning of October.
So she had just
sobbing.
Recently. Yeah, like, cook-ems are, you know, we called her Nana, and same thing, cook-em, and when we lost her, I went to go see a medicine woman, and I didn't realize how depressed I was. Like, you just kind of go on with your life and do things, and you just almost feel like a zombie because you're just doing what you have to do. And then I just knew I felt so disconnected, and I went and sat with a medicine woman, and the medicine woman says, you know, she goes, you can't go with her. And when she said that, it just hit me, right? I was like, wow, what does that mean? I can't go with her. Am I actually, like, not even here? Like, I'm just thinking about being with her so much, and I have kids and stuff. So it just almost brought the spirit back to body. So anyway, so this one's called Nanan. Small aged body, lying helpless, fetal position, barely holding her knees to her chest. Elderly women sit around her. We wait. No one comes. Empty wheelchairs, echoes of whispers, praying to the spirits, sharing with the ones they once knew. Memories. Shadows walk the corridors, waiting for her last breath. Lines deep, eyes fading, hanging on to the world she was once part of. Strong in her past, vulnerable now, waiting for care as a child would. Remembering her hair, once long and black, brown, sweet face, hands soft, securely holding me, still resting my head on her chest. Please don't leave me, Nanan. Who will I be without you? Will I still be me if you leave? I want to follow her into spirit world, longing for her to return, returning to us as she once was. Through the next generation, spirits creep closer and closer, gently pulling her to the world of ghosts, world of memories. I beg for more time. How do I live without you? The room has an odor of life drained. Eyes are empty. Each second that passes, death approaches inch by inch, sore, tired bodies, lost minds, trapped in the past, reaching with broken hearts for someone. Piano playing, faintly heard, old people clapping, forgotten warriors, full lives. Will this nightmare end? Once strong and free, locked down, fragile bodies, soft cries from the dark hallway, fallen, scared, exhausted, wishing for youthfulness, lost in regrets. I leave her there, abandoned. She watches me leave. Nana knows I love her. I ignore my thoughts. I make myself believe I will see her again. It's over. Last day of her life as my Nanan. Tears escape her sad eyes. My heart pains. Heaviness. Please know. Stay with me, Nanan. Life stops. Creator punches a hole through me. Emptiness, pain like no other. I can't breathe. Void. Bye, my Nanan. Watch ye. No word for goodbye in our language. Till we meet again. I love you. Yeah, that's just brings me back to that day when I saw her in the hospital. You know, when you have these warrior women in your life, and they're so strong. You know, when you see them, they walk into a room and you just feel the force around them, and you know, and then seeing them so fragile like that, you know, like their bodies giving up. But you know, I do believe in spirit. I do believe in spirit world, and I believe that, you know, she's happy now and she's traveling and she visits every once in a while. She does come visit. Yeah. She comes and sees me in my dreams every once in a while, and it's so nice. And my middle son, Maegan, recently told me that, you know, he was just feeling off and stuff and just, you know, having a rough day, and then he fell asleep that night and he just woke up and he just remembered hugging Nana and crying with her. And you know, so she does visit, you know?
Yeah.
And she knows we need her still, so
she knows that you love her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard when we think about loss and death, and everybody has different understandings of what death can be. But, you know, based on my belief system and how I was raised, you know, we believe in spirit world, and ceremonies are spirit, right? That's exactly what it is, so.
Yeah. Do you have any other favorite poems?
Sure. Okay, this one is called, I haven't read this one in a while. I don't even know what I have to remember. Transformation. Okay. Pounding heart, breaking free, caged body, blood protected, foreign world, fire burning deep. Smoke swirls out from my being, sweat drips from above, water stings my skin. Rain twirls, seducing, dark surrounds me, my head drops forward. Transforming, shape shift, skin walkers imprisoned behind wooden bars. Alone on the sandy floor, mysterious man has gone, loneliness. Soul urgently pushes out from the confines, bone and flesh. Transform. I am a beaver trapped in a wooden cage. I am a moose trapped in the spruce, shooting pain, stabbing my gut, keeling over a drop of rain. Spirit spirals back down into my human shell. Transform. No longer a beaver, no longer a moose, inspecting my hands. They do not belong to me. They are dark, leathery, an old escuello, Redness escapes, pours open, dripping into a lifeless lake. Awakening the water spirits, the pain subsides. Across the waters, old brown Esquio awakens, calling out to me, smile warmly, eyes inviting me, cross over to the other side. She is plucking geese. She waits. Transformation, Great Lodge stands, wigwam of families, towering behind the old brown Esquio. Animals wander in and out of the lodge. They walk together. They talk to each other. Peaceful exchange, speaking to one another. I understand.
Yeah. Aw.
You know, I was raised in culture and ceremony and so forth. So for me, it's, you know, I write to that experience and the dreams, the Matewin that were gifted to me. So,
yeah. It's really cool that you were raised by your grandparents and on the land. I feel like sometimes it's just like, for me, that feels so foreign that it's like, it's cool to know that, like, I don't know, to like reference Billy Ray Belcourt, we're not all just like signified. Like there are people who are like living that too.
There are people. And I think, and, like, you
there
know,
are a lot of them.
And I think, you know, we all started off as land-based people.
Yeah.
And I think we need to reconnect and understand the land. And, you know, like, you can't have a relationship with something you're completely disconnected with. How do you respect that being or that life if you're not honoring her? I mean, I'm gendering the earth. The earth doesn't have a gender, I don't think. But I think, you know, we need to pay homage and say thanks for the gifts that we have. Like, even water right now, we don't have access to clean water in my community. And us living in the urban centers, we buy bottled water. You know, like, we just got to think about these things, you know. 100 years ago, we can just go drink out of the creek or, you know, or spring. And now we're in a dire state in terms of how we're treating the earth and, you know.
And also how companies like Nestle are just capitalizing that water.
Yeah, and it's a basic necessity. It's a basic right to have access to water. And the fact that, you know, we're privatizing and just a ridiculous state that we're in. And I think we can learn from Indigenous people, like, you know, how do we live in balance? How do we, you know, pay our respects to what's giving us life? And just, and also mending that relationship, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if in the city, you can go to the supermarket and just grab something. And, you know, and I am guilty of that as well. I mean, I think I just grew my first pepper plant and I grabbed a pepper off that plant, and when I ate it, I was like, oh my god, I just felt a jolt of energy and I felt so good that I grew this pepper, you know, like, just that experience. So how do we, I don't know, I think it's just about getting our hands, you know, back into the earth and
grounding yourself
down
in that.
Definitely.
Do you have any plans for the future? Like, like you mentioned another book and potentially a memoir and obviously finishing your dissertation.
I put in for a dissertation. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's just like there. I'm putting in for a feature. I'd like to do a feature with a friend of mine, Leslie Cole's Passing of Souls. Leslie Cole's Passing of Souls, it rhymes.
You're a poet.
Yeah, wow. I didn't even know it. No, it's funny. Yeah, so we're hoping to get our first feature in there. Narrative, Passing of Souls, based on something I wrote when I was in my 20s. Oh my gosh. So it's funny how you bank these projects, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be 46, or am I 46? Oh yeah, I don't even know how old I am.
Anyway,
that's like 20-something years later, and I'm, you know, these stories are now coming to the forefront because now there's a space for it. Now there's a platform. So yeah, so I'm hoping to do that and finish my dissertation this summer. I'm going to a one-month-long residency in Santa Fe, New Mexico in July. And
oh, wow.
So, you know, there's stuff happening. I want to get some more work going. It's just time and travel. Travel's hard.
Yeah.
But you have to do it, I think, when you're, you know, working in film because you have to be there to support your work and or showcase your stuff. And
Yeah, that's great. Thanks. So it sounds like life isn't slowing down for you even slightly.
No, I don't
Potentially
think so.
Getting more busy.
Yeah, it is, definitely. My kids are getting older, so it's a little bit easier now.
You have time?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
With supportive friends.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you would like to say?
If there's listeners out there, I think, you know, take me as an example. Like, don't give up. You just find other ways and be strategic in your approach and, you know, just keep going. And, you know, sometimes it takes 27 years. No, hopefully not. But I mean, like, you just keep going. And, you know, you'll hear a lot of, you'll hear more no's than you'll hear yes. But once you hear that yes, just go for it.
It's worth it.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Jules.
Chi miigwech. Thanks.
The October issue of Discorder is out now. Bibi kicks off this issue of Discorder with her final editor's note, an essay on gratitude and compensation. In this month's issue, Discorder covers the Vancouver municipal election. Check that out and go vote on October 20. There's features on I Am You Are, Wrong Wave No. 6, the VIF Mentorship Program, Super Sick Podcast, and a multimedia art project by Jimena Velasquez. There's also live show reviews of Millennial Line Comedy and Poetry, Records and Readings, Sawdust Collector with Katie Duck, and other gems. There's also additional reviews of albums, new books, and VIF screenings. Special thanks to our advertisers, Blueprint, Timber Concerts, The Rickshaw, The Cinematheque, The Vancouver Podcast Festival, Quiet City, Vancouver New Music, Creative BC, The Vancouver Art Book Fair, The Vancouver International Film Festival, and the AMS.
Do you want me to voice it?
I can voice it. Yeah, please voice
this
one.
That's the wrong mic.
You f- dip. I can't believe I put up with this. And I asked for a grape soda, you asshole. Okay.
Due to a labor dispute, CITR is missing its star voice actors. That means if you're interested in producing PSAs, advertisements, and various other promotional wonders for airplay on the radio, we need you. Learn how to get involved with CITR's production department and all other facets of volunteering at CITR and Discorder Magazine at CITR.ca. Programming, photography, media training, and more. Plus, a guest star in the lounge. No, wait, we can't promise that.
Can't believe I put up with this.
You're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. The time is 2:33, and you just listened to Oceans by Ghostkeeper.
So, Steph, do you want to share with us a little bit about your interview that you did with Eden Robinson?
I sure do.
She sure does.
I sure do. I'm a personal big fan of Eden Robinson. She wrote Monkey Beach, which received a lot of critical acclaim, and they're actually filming a movie for right now. Eden is a member of the Haisla and Heiltsik First Nations, and she writes a lot about stories on her own territory. So she has a trilogy out right now called The Trickster Trilogy about a young man named Jared. He sells weed cookies to get by, and he's kind of just living life, and strange stuff starts to happen to him, and you can't say much more without spoiling it, but we can listen to Eden talk about it.
So is it time for Eden?
It's time for Eden. Reading about, you know, recent media coverage and other interviews you've been in, and it feels like you can't read something about Eden Robinson without the word dark being involved. And now I'm guilty of it too, but how do you identify with that when you read that all the time?
I have some pretty grim sensibilities, so the things that I'm attracted to writing about are not generally cheery, a lot of dark humor.
Yeah, when you're writing, do you ever almost, freak yourself out or scare yourself a little bit with some of the things that you end up putting down?
I'm usually surprised. There are some scenes that I put off writing till the very last minute because, as in life, I like to avoid conflict. So if I really like a character, I don't want to have them go through hell. But as a writer, and, you know, if you're listening to the story and you really want a character that you like not to go through anything or to go through anything that hard, there are certain scenes where I won't tackle them till the very end.
And I guess for anyone who hasn't read the books, and I haven't read the second one, but for the Trickster Trilogy, what's a quick summary of what readers could expect from it?
It's a coming-of-age story in a small company town with ghosts and supernatural creatures.
And then when I was wondering when you're writing, so you write as a teenager, like as a young man, mm-hmm. What is it like to write as a youth? And is that your primary audience, Indigenous youth?
I was assuming that would be my primary audience. And I was sort of gearing it to write towards my niece and nephew. You know, they were my sources for any of the technology that I got right. and they've convinced me that he would not be on Facebook anymore. He would probably be on Instagram or Snapchat.
No, that's very true.
Oh, like, yeah, I think he'll be on Instagram because I find Snapchat a little, I don't know what's happening with it.
Honestly, yeah, no, I am also the same.
Awesome.
And how does that kind of thing inform the book?
It amuses me and it opens up more story possibilities. That certainly would be helpful for, for him keeping track of people and for people keeping track of him. when you look back on like some of the classic horror, you know, they would be so different in the age of tweeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, when something scary happens, you could just tweet out like, "Yo, anyone else see that?"
I'm in panic. Creepy. Someone just bought my landline. I'm going to answer it.
Yeah, no, I think that all the time. It's so true. You just would never have that moment of kind of being totally alone in a scary experience.
No, but yeah, they usually have to figure out a way to shut off the Wi-Fi. Oh, my God.
Another thing that I saw a lot when people are talking about you is referring to you as like a change maker, and I guess sort of like a leader. And I wonder if, how you take on that sort of responsibility. Do you think of yourself that way, like as maybe an educator?
Oh, I think of myself as a part of a group of change makers. I don't think you can do a lot individually. It would take a lot of energy to do stuff by yourself. But there are many, many different groups of people who are looking at the way, like for instance, the initial changes in curriculum that was brought about by a very determined group of educators and administrators who really wanted First Nations youth to graduate with English 12. So they started a pilot program for First Peoples English 10, 11, and 12. And the first year it was just First Peoples English 12, and then it was First Peoples, and then they added 11 and then 10. So they just wanted to make the curriculum more relevant to Indigenous youth, to try and encourage them to pursue English 12, so that they opened up their possibilities for university and for reading. So as a part, and then they brought me in to speak to the teachers, their youth representatives. I had some wonderful experiences out of that. I toured Northern BC, visiting high schools in support of the pilot program, and I got to visit a lot of high schools, and we would do workshops. And they just reminded me of, you know, my own experience in high school. And how much theirs had changed and how much they were the same. So the things that that I'm interested in changing are, you know, the alienation that's still felt between what we're learning and you know, what our experience is.
And that kind of reminds me of another question I had about that sort of similarities and differences growing up and finding your identity, I guess, either in a more northern remote community or in Vancouver, as the book kind of travels down to Vancouver as well. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that.
Oh, yes. In the first book, Pirates in High School, and it's a, you know, Kitimat's a very small town, and his family has fractured when his dad had an accident, and then was, and then the pulp mill closed. Their family fell apart, and Jared took on the role of caretaker for his parents, and that's kind of colored the way he has relationships with people. And in the context of a small town, not a lot to do on the weekends. So one of the ways that he supports his family is by this was pre-legalization. Selling cookies. I think now he wouldn't have. Well, he would be underage, so it would still be frowned upon. But If in the age of legalization, I'm not sure how that plot line would go. But, you know, he's selling pot cookies and, you know, he's moving between the sort of high school groups to make a living. And then, you know, the supernatural elements come in and take over towards the end of the book. And he realizes that he is, you know, spoiler alert, the son of a trickster. But he completely rejects all of that. He just wants to have as normal and quiet a life as he can manage. So Trickster Drift takes place a year later. He's 17. He's graduated from high school. He's been sober for a year, and he wants to go to Vancouver to take. There's only two places right now that teach diagnostic medical sonography. That are close, BCIT and I think it's SAIT in Alberta. So he goes to BCIT to upgrade to get into the program, and quickly discovers that rent in Vancouver is more than he imagined.
And a lot of us imagined.
As his options run out, he chooses to move in with his estranged aunt, and from there discovers he has more family than he ever thought he had. And it's a wonderful and strange experience. And then he quickly runs into the fact that Aunt May's apartment is very haunted.
Of course. That's so great, though. That's I can't wait. I can't wait to read it personally. And how much of this is out of stories that you heard, and how much of it is sort of your own embellishments and imaginations? The stories about the specific monsters and of the trickster.
Well, one of the ghosts is called Dent, Arthur Dent. He changed his name because he loved the Douglas Adam Hitchhiker trilogy. So that's strictly out of my imagination. That doesn't come out of any indigenous stories. But he obeyed the rules of the indigenous, you know, the indigenous worldview of my characters. Some of the creatures, like the thing that lives in the wall, you know, are or the flying head, you know, those are spirits from the other world that are completely my own. But Chu is a very old ghost, and she remembers Jared's family going back, you know, pre-contact. So she's been a part of their family for a very long time, I'm afraid of spoiling too much because
no, don't make sure you don't.
I'm infamous for that within my friend circle. If I've watched Game of Thrones before you, it's like, you know, I will. So I have some friends and family who will block me until they've watched that episode.
Oh, that's funny.
Cersei exploded everybody. Wildfire.
If you saw the film Edge of the Knife yet or heard about it?
No, I'm dying to see it. I also want to see Paddle to Clem too.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. hard thing about living up north. We don't get a lot of the indie films.
Yeah, that's too bad, especially since Edge of the Knife, you know, should be available.
You'd think it really should. Yeah,
Well, it did a similar. It wasn't quite that similar, I guess, but there was a lot of supernatural elements, and it would get quite dark. But then, kind of like with speaking to you or with reading your work, there can also be kind of unexpected moments of humor that surprise you in between.
Between the mind-numbing darkness. Yeah. Cool. Now I really want to see it.
Yeah. Is that a sort of natural pattern that you go through? You write something really dark and then a joke comes to mind?
Sometimes they live uncomfortably close to each other, and I have to consciously remember to keep them a little separated so I'm not whiplashing the reader. There's still some whiplashing going on in Trickster Drift, but sometimes humor and horror live so they're, you know, really close neighbors.
And why do you think that is?
I don't think we would be able to process a lot of the truly horrific material in our life without using humor to, like my narrator uses humor to keep as a sort of armor. So it's natural for him to make jokes. And sometimes the situations themselves are so absurd, even though they're dark, it helps to laugh.
Yeah. Is there anything that you've heard from a reader who got something out of one of your stories that kind of surprised you? Like they may have read it or interpreted it in a way that you didn't expect?
Oh, all the time. Everyone brings their own context to a novel. So it's a weird amalgam of the words you wrote and the reader's experience. But that's true of, I think, every single novel out there. You can't take the experience of reading into the writer's control. So sometimes the interpretations have been very surprising. sometimes they've been very touching. I've gotten a lot of Sasquatch stories out of people after they read Monkey Beach or Death. My dad was a huge Bogus fan, and his big disappointment in Son of a Trickster was that there were no Bogus in it.
Maybe for a future book.
I was like, I'll put him in the third. By the time he told me that, I had already finished the second book, and trying to shoehorn in Bogus was just not going to work.
So. Yeah, just a little cameo.
He's getting laser hair removal. Oh, God.
I guess the only other thing I was going to ask is what kind of thing is on your radar right now, I guess in terms of books or movies or news, like something that you're paying attention to?
Well, right now we're in the middle of award season, so there are so many lists of fantastic books that my brain's kind of exploding. Right now, like the movies that Monkey Beach just wrapped filming, so it should be ready next year.
That's another thing I'm so excited about. Before I let you go, I definitely want to ask about that experience. I'm so excited for that. Oh, my gosh. It looks so great.
Oh, my gosh. Well, because I've been on book tour, I missed a lot of the filming. But the little snippets that I did see, there's some really talented actors in the movie, especially Grace Dove, who's playing Lisa. It's I don't know how anyone operates in film. It's such an intense process. Pre-production, post-production, it's all intense. But for instance, you know, we'd be on set and they'd be changing lines last minute for, you know, continuity or to try condense the scene. And she just rolled with it. I was like, wow, okay. She was a wonderful mentor to the younger actors. And I felt like, you know, a grandma on the set because all the actors were so young. Like the Joey Ouellette, who plays Jimmy, is actually 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, Takai Blaney is playing karaoke. And I was like, oh, my God, look at you, you baby. Like, oh my God.
Just grabbing their cheeks and
okay, don't be that Auntie Eden. Don't be that Auntie. Oh.
And is it also, I guess, did some of the actors sort of surprise you too? And just seeing it on screen, like, how does that feel, even just the little bits at the beginning?
Oh, well, I'm in Vancouver right now at the Vancouver Writers Festival, and on Monday night when I, the first full night I was here, I had an afternoon break in my schedule, and I went down to one of the studios that they'd rented and watched them do the green screen of Sam Bob. He's playing the little man, and you know, I wasn't expecting because, you know, he's dressed as the little man, and it's a green screen studio, so the walls are green, and if you know film at all, there's like, you know, 40 people all around him, you know, with lights and cameras and, you know, monitors, and his performance cut through all that, and, you know, I had a visceral, emotional response to his performance. That surprised me.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really amazing. Yeah.
I was like, oh, God. I have to redeem my mascara.
Well, unfortunately, I can see we're at 10:43, go. But it was so great to speak to you. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck at the Writers' Fest and the rest of your book tour.
Thank you.
All right. See you.
Bye.
So you're a member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts around downtown at
Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, Sakura's Classical Records, the Cinematheque, Vinyl Records, and the Fall Tattooing.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
You're listening to Unseated Airwaves on 101.9 FM. It's 2:57. Before we close the show, here are some unseated events. Tomorrow, October 25th, an evening with Lee Miracle and Kalumpa Bob, where they'll be reading from their latest works called Hope Matters. In Lee's words, Hope Matters is a collection of poetry focused on the journey of Indigenous people from colonial beginnings to reconciliation. This is a free event at Massey Books from 7 to 9 p.m., but you need to RSVP so you can find it on Facebook.
Another event is Downtown Eastside Front and Center, Standing Up for Ourselves. The Downtown Eastside is alive with talent, and the festival brings together an evening of music, words, film, and comedy. Enjoy artists who have been here for a long time and artists who are relative newcomers. This is an event aiming to bring power to Indigenous peoples living in Metro Vancouver. There will be a welcome by Carnegie Community Center Elder and Resident Kat Norris, performances by Christy Lee Charles, Alex Taylor McCallum, Aaron Ryan, Johnny Shy, and others. This event is this Friday on October 26th from 7 to 9 p.m.
PRISM Magazine International Dreams launch. PRISM International will be launching their Dreams issue this Thursday, tomorrow, October 25th, at VFS Cafe, that's 390 West Hastings, from 7 to 11 p.m. There'll be readings from Sam Nock, Greg Brown, and others. A Jeremy Ducharme film will be screened as well. Stop by for an evening of dreamy artists.
The next event is Culture is Healing Drum Making Workshop. This is an event where Indigenous youth can come together to share our culture and have great discussions. We will be making drums with their elder, Val Nicholson. Materials are limited to 25 drums, but they're very excited to offer other cultural activities such as beading and button blanket making, as well as medicine bag making. So come join us for a night filled with culture and connection. This is a free event for Indigenous youth aged 14 to 29 and is at number 205, 568 Seymour Street.
There's also an artist talk by Cole Pauls. Cole Pauls to host a two-part reading group and artist talk on indigeneity in comics at Pollyanna Library. That's also tomorrow, October 25th, from 6 to 8 p.m. Be sure to check it out, all you comic fans.
So there are like 7 events for tomorrow, so I hope that all of you can at least make it to one of them. But thank you for tuning in to Unseated Airwaves. Thank you to Jules Kustashin and... who did you interview again?
Eden Robinson.
And Eden Robinson for your lovely time. Thank you to the collective members, Jamuna, myself, Autumn, Amanda, and Jess for producing the show. Join us again for episode 2 on November 7th. We'll be having a line interview with Kim Harvey, the writer of the matriarchal play Kamloopa. Be sure to check it out. It's every 2 weeks this season, unlike last season where it was every week.
And yes, along with Kim Harvey, we'll also have a short interview with investigative journalist Tanya Talaga. She's the first Indigenous woman to ever give the CBC Massey Lectures. And we have some clips and a talk with her last night. And she's going to be giving another talk to a sold-out crowd tonight at the York Theatre. If you know any Indigenous artists or events you think we should know about, tweet us at Unseated Airwaves. You'll be able to find this episode and others online at CITR.ca.
My name is Steph Wood, and you've been listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. Hoi chuk sa. Thank you for listening.